Welcome to the Why Wars Happen History podcast. I am your host, Emily Ross, and today I am very excited about our guest who is going to be discussing his new podcast series, The Man Who Calculated Death. He's an actor, a producer, and generally known as pretty much one of the nicest guys in Hollywood, John Cryer. John, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. I was about to say something deeply insulting. But once you said nicest guy in Hollywood, I had to back off of it.
I'm terribly sorry. We can change that reputation here if you want. You know, okay. Just go for it.
This is the podcast.
This is where we're gonna do it. So The Man Who Calculated Death, like that title just grabs you by the throat, and it is the series goes into a little bit on the reasoning for that name, but I gotta ask, was that just like immediately you knew that's what you were gonna call it?
No, as a matter of fact, we wrestled with it. The story is really from the point of view of a woman named Suzanne Rico, who is an LA-based, she was the anchor woman here on CBS News, the local affiliate, and she was kind of a fixture in LA. But something that she and I had never really discussed, the way the whole thing came about was she and her husband threw this lovely dinner party for me at one point, and she knew that I was a big aficionado of the space program, that I knew the history of it and was very interested in it. And she said, my grandpa worked on the space program. I was like, wow, oh, that's amazing. And she said, yeah, and before that, he worked for Hitler. And she just went on about, the rest of the dinner. And I said, I'm sorry, Suzanne, you're going to have to back up on that. And she told me that when her mother had passed away a couple of years before, her mother on her deathbed revealed to Suzanne that she had been writing a memoir. But since she was dying, she wouldn't be able to finish it. And she wanted Suzanne to finish the memoir for her. So Suzanne, who had always sort of knew a little bit about her grandfather, was now sort of forced to face her family's past and in a much more direct way. And once she started work on the podcast in earnest, she found this article about her grandfather because he became an incredibly famous engineer. And he actually came up with a principle to figure out the fallibility of various complex systems, how often they will fail. And it's become something that's used in the world of engineering to this day. But there was a magazine article that called him the man who calculated death. And Suzanne loved that from day one.
It's so perfect, especially the German overlay of, during the title where the voice says it in German, the translation. It's just, it's so perfect. And
I'm so glad you like that. We worked so hard on this. Suzanne, first of all, for Suzanne, it was an incredibly painful journey. Yeah. It was a journey in Germany. But it was incredibly painful and difficult for her to sort of face her grandfather's complicity in a really horrible time in history. But as you can see, when you listen to the podcast, it's an incredible journey through all facets of World War II and through just even the idea of war and how we're all pulled into it in awful ways.
Absolutely.
She does an amazing, amazing job on it. But the title sequence that you're mentioning was something we went back and forth on over and over. because it was her family story, and it was just incredibly important to her.
Yes, it's kind of like, no pun intended, but did you realize how explosive this thing is? There's so many layers to it, how it was going to be. Was there a point where she's talking to you about all of this and you're kind of letting the layers unravel and you're like, wait, what? Hold on a minute. Wait, hold on. Was there kind of a point where that happened?
Yes, there were several points, actually, because when she originally set out to do this, she had not solved the mystery of her grandmother's death. She was just going to look. And so it was during the course of production on this that she solved it, and she did this amazing investigative work. So you have to sort of change the focus of it. Originally, the focus was on her reckoning with the history of her family. But once she solved that mystery, she could bring the whole family into that reckoning and that greater understanding of what actually happened.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of this thing where historians almost inevitably face a time where they have to describe a person in a historical context that did bad things, but they have to kind of also acknowledge that there's a human element to it there. And that's very, very hard tightrope to walk.
Yes. It's incredibly hard because everybody's complicated. And, most of us feel like we want to have patriotism. We want to, we want to feel a part of our nation. We have values and customs that are important to us. And where does our loyalty to that idea, where will that take us? Sometimes that will take us to some place that we feel ennobles us as human beings. And sometimes it will reveal itself as an effort that was, really, really destructive. And it's hard to come to terms with that, and we all and everybody's just trying to live, one of the my favorite quotes is that, everybody was just trying to live another day. This was the biggest war the Earth had witnessed in its history, at World War II. And I've never in my lifetime had to deal with stakes like that. And I have no idea what I would do. I would love to think that, I'd be the one hiding Jews in the attic. But right. Who knows? I've not always been the bravest guy in the room. That's right. For sure. Right. We might be disappointed in how I really act.
It's interesting. One of the things that comes up a lot when I'm interviewing different guests is Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where you eventually come to these things where you're trying to understand how could people do this or that. And it's like that hierarchy of needs where your own survival always is going to come first. And you only start thinking about other people once your own survival is secured or your family's is secured. And so it really is kind of an interesting question. But again, the show does such a good job of not, like, there's no excuses made or anything like that. It does such a good job of making you feel maybe what was in his head at the time and why he did these things. And I kind of wanted to ask about that, where the series goes over some of his motivations, and it definitely wasn't cut and dry. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about what his motivations might have been for getting involved?
Well, we're talking about Robert Lusser, who was Suzanne Rico's grandfather. And his life was incredibly interesting from when he was young. He was a child prodigy in terms of engineering. He would build his own boats and, at 9 or 10 years old. That he was willing to fly planes that he designed and built himself. That is literally putting your life in, that you trust yourself that much. To do that boggled my mind.
But he became
a flyer in the age of Charles Lindbergh and Amelia Earhart, when flyers were the tech titans of their time. They were the Mark Zuckerbergs, and they were people sang songs about them, and they were celebrities. He had a celebrity romance with Elie Beinhorn, who was the Amelia Earhart of Germany, basically. A charming lady, he had a charmed life where he was used to thinking of something and then bringing it into existence. And that's an incredibly powerful feeling. But that comes up against, once he has a family, then he's introduced to vulnerability. He has several kids, and he knows this secret about his wife's ancestry that all of a sudden makes everything, brings everything into bright relief, because you realize every choice he had to make after that point is colored by that that he has a secret to protect. And you know, I'd love to think that I would, you know, I just would have gotten on a boat and taken my family away, and you know, and but once you have a stake in your country and in your nation and in your family and where you live, it's really hard to uproot. Mm-hmm. And you have to really understand the danger you're in. But of course, once he finally understood the danger he was in, which is when he out of nowhere is accused of war crimes by the authoritarian dictatorship of Adolf Hitler, you know, then it's too late. He's in the machine, and there's no getting out of it. So, you know,
you can't just walk away.
Yeah. You can't just walk away. And he was too brilliant to walk away. He was too big an asset. I can't imagine Hitler would have let him escape. So you know, it's I think also it's a really valuable story of how a family, how the world changes subtly around this family until it's too late to escape. You know. I thought a lot of Tanta Heidi's recollections of the small things that changed were really great. Were really great, really helpful in showing, like in the second episode. And I don't want to be a spoiler if people do listen to the show. But this is a small thing. But the way that Hitler would he would require sort of idolatry from the populace. But first he did very easy things, like on his birthday you were supposed to light a red candle and leave it in the window. And but what that served as, it was a really easy thing to do. It was not that hard, you know. But the people who didn't do it, all of a sudden his intelligence services understood they were not going to be loyal.
Right.
And so it was a small thing. It was just a tiny little show of loyalty. He made it easy to do, mm-hmm. but the consequences of not doing it were so large that people just went along. It was just so much easier to just put a candle in your window.
Oh, yeah.
You signal your loyalty. And then all of a sudden every German looks around their house and sees hundreds of red candles in the window, and they just think, okay, we're all in on this. There's nobody who has any doubts. It must just be me.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring up the aunt's kind of little tidbits. Tanta Heidi, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Those are some of the ones that stayed with me the most, just those little details that really bring it to life. I thought that was just – I'm getting a little goosebumps actually right now remembering it. It's so my God. So, there are times in – while listening to it that you feel like you're really there. You almost like feel like you're there amongst the chaos of war and the fire in the streets, and those little bits of stories and information really help it come alive. I wanted to ask, was it really like, how did you make it such a soundscape, so cinematic without overwhelming it's such a good balance.
Again,
that
was Suzanne basically gave herself a master class during the course of this. We worked for the British company called Novel for a while on it. But it became this huge, once the project started as a simpler project, and then it became this huge thing that became so unwieldy. But Suzanne learned from the sound designer who was working with her on the first few episodes, and understood that, you know, and understood that you're painting this picture. So Suzanne did most of that stuff. Most of that sound design work was her. But we also worked with a guy who's this is embarrassing, but his name just left me. Oh, this is terribly embarrassing. His name was Rob. I'd have to look it up on my phone. But we just said, hey, Rob, can you fix this?
Thank you, Rob, wherever you are.
But he did amazing work, and she did amazing work. I mean, she – most of the again, this thing just went off into this became so much of a bigger, more epic story mm-hmm. than we expected that she basically taught herself – how to make a podcast, how to produce a podcast.
Wow.
And she's, you know, there is a planned second season. And she's going to be, you know, from day one, it's going to be all Suzanne. It's an amazing story. The first season is about the family surviving World War II, and the second season is about them being smuggled to the United States via Operation Paperclip.
Oh, wow.
This family intersected with history in amazing, amazing ways. I mean, because then they were, this German family was plopped down in the middle of Alabama in Huntsville. With Wernher von Braun at the Redstone Arsenal and help design the American space program.
I wanted to ask about that. You mentioned that you were like really into the space program. So that kind of answers one of my questions that I had for you was I wanted to ask about if you had to kind of take a crash course and like, what's the difference between the V1 and the V2? Because he helped develop the V1, world's first cruise missile.
Yes.
And he also designed the BF-109?
Yes.
And that was like the pride and glory of Germany's aircraft arsenal, and I could be wrong, but I think today it's still it holds the record for the most made fighter plane in history. I think it's like this huge deal.
In number manufactured.
So did you have to like do a bunch of learning and stuff, or did you already kind of like, hey, I know what a big deal this is?
I knew all this. No, I knew about the V1 and I knew about the V2 because
of course
the competition between Wernher von Braun and Robert Lesser was kind of a storied narrative because, it was these two geniuses creating these incredibly they were creating a new type of warfare. At the time, they called it robot war. And of course, now we're really experiencing robot war in a much different way. So their competition at Peenemünde in the 40s during World War II is kind of legendary, and that they came to the United States and then had the competition yet again, but they were working on the same project is just endlessly fascinating to me. But you know, people in the United States are very familiar with Wernher von Braun.
Yeah, the V2.
The V2 was the first ballistic missile, and was repurposed for our American rocketry program. And he became the spokesman for space travel in the United States. He became, Life magazine, on the cover of Life magazine. And, you know, he was a very handsome, incredibly charismatic guy. And people said, he was this brilliant guy who worked for Hitler, but he was a good Nazi, you know. Exactly. One of the things that is explored in the podcast is, again, what is the level of complicity and what, this is war. And how dark and bad did it get? And it gets pretty bad. When you listen, it goes to the darkest possible place. Suzanne faced that with just incredible bravery, I thought.
Yeah, and I kind of like have this sense of, you know, I'd be curious to see. So the Treaty of Versailles, such a huge thing in the World Wars, right? And so her grandfather, Robert Lesser, actually helped Germany break the Treaty of Versailles. He wasn't just like, hey, all aboard after the fact. He was part of the breaking of it by helping design and manufacture fighter planes. And Germany was very limited on what they could only make, like defensive weapons. And so he was actually helping them from the beginning before the war. Design weapons of war. And so I'm curious if she kind of, God, you got to carry around this like weight of my grandfather helped break the Treaty of Versailles. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah,
did she ever comment about that?
It's interesting because one of the things she establishes, and as a person who does what he loves for a living, I get that. I get that amazing sense of fulfillment. And for him, it appears that building planes was the only thing that brought him joy. Mm-hmm. And so when he was given the chance to, build new war planes for Germany, there wasn't that even moment of, well, I'm helping them break the Treaty of Versailles. You know, also, by the way, Hitler at this point had so conditioned the Germans to believing they were victims.
Right.
You know, and that is a symptom of authoritarian movements throughout history, is mm-hmm. convincing the populace they are victims and that these authoritarians will regain their masculinity and their power. They will make wherever they are great again. Once you've convinced the populace they are victims, they're capable of all kinds of things because they feel it's suddenly rationalized. I'm sure this is something that you come into discuss at length on your show.
Yeah, definitely. It's like literally you could write a playbook about how to do this, and it almost like always works.
Yes.
You know, it's yeah.
There's no evidence to suggest that he had qualms about working for the Nazis at the time. He was reticent to join the Nazis because he knew of his own family secret. But at the same time, and there is some evidence to suggest that he ridiculed fervent Nazis.
That's dangerous.
Yes. Again, whenever you're around somebody with very strong political beliefs, people tend to sort of back off a little bit and say, well, they're taking this all a little too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody knew where it was going to end, you know? Everybody just thought, oh, Hitler's, you know, he's just going to put the Jews in their place. You know, they're not going to be controlling things anymore. And he's just going to get back the Germany that existed before World War One. And, you know, he's just going to reinstate that. And that's all. But no, he wanted Lebensraum. He wanted living space. So, that justified invading Russia, you know, and Poland and Austria and, you know, and all everything.
Classic blunder,
yes. but at any rate, a lot of people thought Hitler was a blowhard. You know, they thought he was just a blowhard. And he kept getting results. You know, people kept just rolling over for him at first. So it seemed like, well, okay, this guy must be onto something. He's so successful.
People
rationalized it.
Yeah, since the Nuremberg trials, we've been debating like how much can you blame people that had like a follower status as opposed to like a doer status, you know? And it's a very highly even to this day debatable topic on that kind of thing. But I have to say it. The show is so good at walking that tightrope. I was so so impressed. To be honest, I sat down and I was like, all right, I'm going to listen to a couple episodes. And like, literally it was 3 a.m. and I was like, holy crap. I just sat through the whole thing. I think I got up like once to get some food and I just listened to the whole thing.
Wow.
And yeah. So gosh, you're talking about how it goes to a few dark places and I'm not going to give away any spoilers or anything, but, was there ever a moment that kind of haunted you after production wrap that kind of just stays with you? I know there are, I can't stop thinking about some of them.
Mm-hmm. What haunts me is the place that this put Suzanne, because in the end, when she does solve the mystery, it's not who she thought it was and it's not how she thought it happened. And she become and you hear her suddenly off on this incredible emotional space of just trying, you know, even when she's dealing with the people that killed her grandmother, she becomes this just vessel of incredible empathy and understanding. And that's what really touched me, was that she's just the humanity of that, and the moment in episode 5, you know, when she actually talks to a Holocaust survivor, and he says some astonishing things, you know, that are just that you just can't imagine. I cannot imagine being able to overcome my rage enough to be where that man is.
Right.
That he could find his humanity at that moment was amazing to me as well.
It's very inspiring. I was very surprised at that. And I definitely give a lot of credit to her for having the courage to go in there and talk about it. And you could feel, like, in her voice, the emotion that must have involved for both sides in that conversation. And now you've given me something else that's going to stick with me at 3 a.m. laying in bed just thinking about her humanity. No, it's true, though. It's true. I definitely wanted to comment on how, you know, as is probably the case with a lot of people, I've watched a lot of documentaries on World War II, talked to a lot of historians, books, you know, a lot of historical knowledge. However, this series still, I've never seen anything like it. Out of everything I've seen in the World War II media, this seems so fresh and just, I was really surprised at, like, wow, there's another layer of something I've never even seen before. What do you think is the most surprising thing that audiences might take away?
I think it's the flip of the point of view. I mean, to understand the World War II through a German family's eyes. You know, obviously we've seen Sound of Music and understand, you know, and Dire Van Frank and, you know, but people, you know, people who were witnesses to history and participants in some of the biggest moments of history. I mean, I tried to, when I first had that conversation with Suzanne and she said, oh, my grandfather designed the V1. I said, okay, you need to understand the impact that the V1 had on the UK as a nation. You know, it is synonymous with terror. It is. They still find them. You know, they still find ordnance when they'll be digging up
car park,
and they'll find one in a car park. Exactly, and it's, you know, I don't think she understood that her grandfather's work impacted history the way that it did.
Huge. The weapons we use today are based off of some of his designs.
Yes, exactly. And you know, and she, again, she faced all that incredibly bravely. But it was something that in her family that had just never been, you know. And she's a smart lady. She's a journalist, you know. But there's some family secrets that are just too dark to plumb.
I think audiences are really going to be surprised that there's another part to listen to of World War II. It almost feels like watching All's Quiet on the, oh my gosh, my
Western Front.
Yeah, I'm like
that's okay.
I forgot Rob's last name,
and this is terribly embarrassing. Like, I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah, okay, look it up. Yeah, yeah. It was almost awesome. Like watching that movie where you're like, you actually get to see something from Germany's side, which is very rare.
Yes.
And this series that you produced is not all about Germany's side, but it is interesting to get some of that viewpoint in there.
Rob Spate.
Thank you, Rob Spate, for the
Rob
soundscapes.
Spate. You did an amazing job, Rob.
A round of applause for Rob Spate.
Good job, Rob. I'm so embarrassed that I forgot his name because he was amazing. He's also a stand-up comedian. So if you need a stand-up comedian in England,
who
also does podcast sound design in amazing, amazing layers, Rob is your guy.
Podcast sound design. I'm going to keep that name in my mind for that.
He's great.
Okay, so you talked about how there's a season 2 coming up, which I didn't know until I'm talking to you now, and I'm so excited for that. But has anybody floated the idea of maybe like a Netflix series or like this is pretty top tier quality and just kind of has that feel?
Well, interestingly, when Suzanne first came, you know, after we had that conversation about a year later, she came to me and my production company and said, is there a way to develop this for television, for a, you know, for an epic show? And she told me all these amazing moments. We went through it and we were just like, it's such an epic story that this would be There's a thing in the industry now of things. Things don't exist until they are IP. They are intellectual property. Mm-hmm. And she'd have to either write it as a book, or, and then my wife, once she found out that Suzanne had done these enormous and voluminous interviews with all of her relatives, my wife said, "You should make that a podcast." And that we realized that would be the best way into this story because she got an amazing audio from so many of her relatives and from the people who helped her in the search and
incredible.
You know, she'd gone all these places and by the way, on her own dime. I mean, she went to Germany. She went to St. Louis. She was all over the world.
Wow. Yeah. There was a lot of traveling going on. Honestly, I hope that it can turn into some sort of documentary or I kind of what you're saying about IP. I don't know if you know this, but I traditionally work as a producer and a screenwriter in Hollywood. And so,
that was a mansplain moment. There's something you do not understand about the industry. I'm sorry, I did not know you were a screenwriter.
No. Most of our audience is not going to be, coming from that angle. And I actually was thinking about how I have a period piece right now that is at a studio and it's just stuck there forever and it's probably never going to go anywhere. But one thing that I learned with that is that period pieces, and this is a period piece, are just notoriously difficult to produce. Like, it's just like you think you got to shoot over the moon for a normal project. You got to shoot out to Neptune for a period piece, it, no matter who you have attached to it. And so, I think that establishing it as an IP first is a really, really good way. And I hope that something comes of it. This is such top tier quality.
Oh, thank you. And again, we didn't know when we started this that Suzanne would solve the mystery. We didn't know that those kind of things, that was even possible. So, it was one of those things that she just dug in and we just kept, stayed the course. And she did an amazing job.
Well, before you go here, I just want to ask you one more question. And so speaking of season two and maybe other stuff, is there any other podcasts that you might be looking at as a series to do, like producing anything else?
Oh, well, yeah, there's other things. There's a wonderful podcast called Give Me Away. That's a science fiction narrative podcast that I love, that I would love to make into a show. This has been an amazing period of podcasts, and there's ones that, like, I just listened to one called Kill List that will make a great TV show if anybody decides to do it. But there's also one of the things that I love about podcasts is that they're their own medium. I mean, one of my favorite recent ones is Hysterical, the Dan Taberski podcast.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
It's wonderful. It's about the history of it's loosely about the history of sort of psychosomatic group illnesses, like Salem witch trials and things like that, mass sort of manic episodes. But it's absolutely beautifully done. Dan Taberski does amazing, amazing work.
What's it called again?
It's called Hysterical. Also on Wondery Plus, just like The Man Who Calculated Death, if I may.
Yes.
And by the way, that is the thing about I had a Wondery Plus subscription before I even worked with. I was excited to work with Wondery because I already had a subscription. So,
They're awesome. They're wonderful. No pun intended. Again, with the puns, I can't help it.
They do a great job, and they've been great with our show. And Hysterical is wonderful. He also did one called 9/12, which is basically about how the world changed after 9/11, which is this amazing sort of zoom out on just it's a remarkable cultural document.
Intense.
And then he also did The Line, which is this amazing thing about war crimes in the Iraq war, and he actually it's absolutely remarkable in terms of, because he gets, there was a I believe a Navy SEAL who was accused of war crimes, and he actually has a full-on Jack Nicholson "You Can't Handle the Truth" moment with this guy. It's called The Line. It's an amazing piece of work.
So it's another podcast that'll kind of keep you up at night wondering about the meaning of life and
it's about war, you know, and in a very very in a new different way
now I'm excited. I'm going to go check that out. That sounds really cool. So that's all the time we have for right now. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on and answering these questions. I loved The Man Who Calculated Death. And everybody can get it on Wondery Plus.
First two episodes are free, but then you got to have a Wondery Plus subscription. But like I
said,
it's
totally worth
Hysterical is a Wondery Plus exclusive. So it's worth seeing it for that. Signing up for that one. And I'm proud to be a part of it.
I love them. So, okay. Thank you, John, again, John Cryer, for coming onto the show. And I hope to have you back after season two. Maybe we'll talk then.
That would be amazing. That would be great. this one took a long time. So it'll be a little bit down the road.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Have a good night. And, happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks to you as well.
Okay, bye.
Bye.